On today's podcast, Tape 3, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles and Something Else by the Kinks.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
We're going back to 1967 then today. Both these albums came out that year. The Beatles one in June and the Kinks one in August, I think. So both recorded.
I'm going to say.
Oh, okay. Both recorded and released in that year, the height of the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
But
just before I was born.
Yeah, and then but different kind of, I don't know, different kind of outlooks on it in many ways, I think. Should we talk a little bit about how familiar we are or not with these albums?
Okay.
Well, obviously I've heard Sgt. Pepper before,
because
I live in the northern and western hemisphere. So it wasn't an album that I grew up with, but I did tape it off someone as a teenager. I remember having a tape of it. I can't remember who I taped it off. Probably one of my friend's dads, I think. And I liked it very much. And I remember watching a documentary. Must have been 1987 because it was called It Was 20 Years Ago Today, but there was a very good documentary on ITV. So I'd have been about 16 when that was on. And I watched that and enjoyed that very much. I also had an NME album called Sgt. Pepper Knew My Father, which was released around about that same time, which had covers of all the songs from it on there, which I bought. I mean, it had The Wedding Present, The Fall and Billy Bragg on it, so I was obviously going to buy that. It's not that great, but there you go.
I think it was a tape.
I had it on tape anyway, yeah. And then the Kinks album, I've not really heard until just recently for this podcast. I remember when in the early 80s, the Kinks had a big hit with a song called Come Dancing.
Yeah, that's right.
And I really liked that. And I remember talking to my dad about it and him saying, oh, the Kinks, well, they've been around for years. They're really good. Have you got any of their stuff on your tapes? No. So I remember we went to Our Price in Guildford and my dad helped me choose because there was quite a few different Best of the Kinks kind of ones.
Mm.
And I bought one called 100 Minutes of the Kinks.
How long is it?
It's 100 minutes. It's excellent. One of those, it's only on tape, and it's one of those ones where later on, a few years after that, when I was working at HMV, you'd hate those 100 minutes of compilations because you knew they're going to snap. They're made on very, very thin tape, and they're going to snap. But my one lasted me a long time. But it didn't have that many songs. It had Waterloo Sunset, which was the opening song on side one, David Watts, Death of a Clown. But other than that, I'm sure it didn't have any of these other songs on it. So
it's fairly new to you. About half the album at least is new to you then.
More than half, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
A few years ago on the Mojo magazine, they gave away a CD on the cover which was called Something Else, a new version of Something Else, which had lots of Trust the Wizards favourites on it. It had Chuck Prophet, Boogerins, Ty Segall, Reckless Eric, Mick Harvey from the Bad Seeds. Each of them sort of doing a song off that album. So
basically the modern version of that same thing that was done in the NME with the Beatles.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I think it probably says something that both these albums have lent themselves to that treatment where you've got artists who we like.
Yes.
I mean, in the main.
Yeah, I mean...
It's an album worth covering.
Chuck Prophet, Ty Segall and Reckless Eric didn't really, and Mick Harvey, they didn't really change it very much from the original songs, and that's why their versions still work, I think. A lot of other people tried to slow down the songs and change the arrangements and didn't really like them. Yeah.
Nice. Well, my relationship with the albums is slightly different. I've got Sgt. Pepper's here on vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And this is my mother's copy.
Yep.
Which she doesn't know that I've got, but fortunately she's now senile, so it's fine.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, just keeping it light.
Yeah.
I've checked when it came out. This is 1970 repress.
Right, okay.
I presume that she would have bought that herself. It plays fine as well. I mean, it's unfortunately, it's stereo.
Right.
And I really don't like... If you've heard the mono mix, I don't know if you have, it's so much better, right, I think, to listen to than the stereo. I really am not impressed with the stereo mix. But nevertheless, you know, we'll talk about what we've been listening to. The Kinks, I had that same tape, My Father, is it? I can't remember what was it called? My Father Likes the Beatles.
Oh, Sergeant Pepper Knew My Father. Yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
The Kinks, I had for years one Kinks record, and I think I must have bought it when I was in early teens, I would say. And I've still got it. It's a 10-inch record.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Shape of Things to Come.
Yeah.
Which is, it's clearly a compilation, but I didn't really know that at the time. I really liked it because... Dave Davies is playing a flying V on the front.
Right.
And at that time, I was mostly into sort of heavy metal and various things like that, but I really like that. And I really like the song Lola, that's on there. And I think Waterloo Sunset's definitely on that. I should have got it out and had a look. But that was the only record I had by the Kinks for years and years and years. And yeah. Then, as you say, they sort of hit the charts again in the 80s. And that sort of made them more interesting. We sort of looked into them a bit. But I didn't really buy into them until fairly recently. And I got, for Christmas, actually, I got a box set of their, I think it's their first five albums.
Right.
All in mono, of which this is one. So this is the version I've got of Something Else.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
Mm.
I mean, the songwriting is really good, but there's a notable change. They go from quite a loud rock band, basically, into something completely different over a period of less than 10 years.
Yeah.
Quite remarkable. And I suppose the Beatles the same. Changed, didn't they, from being a bar band.
Yeah. From being a rock and roll R&B type band.
Yeah.
Because that compilation I had was lent very heavily on those early albums. And they were, you know, more straightforward pop songs. But the ones I particularly liked on the whole were not the All Day and All of the Night and Till the End of the Day and those kind of ones. But I really liked the Dandy
Well, being a dandy
Mr.
yourself.
Mr. Pleasant and stuff like that. Those kind of social commentary ones, dedicated follower of fashion, those kind of ones.
Yeah. But it's interesting because I think that what we're coming to here is that the Beatles kind of at the end of that journey of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
But the Kinks have got further to go because the album that comes after this is... what's it called? The one with... the stupid long name. What's it called?
Lola versus the Power Man.
No. No,
I should have done Three Preservation Society.
That's the one.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is a totally different album, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's just a bit further on. So I don't think these are kind of equivalent in that sense, but nevertheless quite interesting. Should we start talking about the Beatles then?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I would say my take on this, listen to it again, and perhaps I hadn't really realized before. It's all about drugs, isn't it? Really.
Well, is it? Is it? I mean, you can read it as that, and people have read it as that, but you can also read it as definitely not about that. I mean, I was... You know the song Mr. Kite, Benefit of Mr. Kite?
Yeah, so being for the benefit of Mr. Kite.
Being for the benefit of Mr. Kite. That was apparently banned by the BBC at the time because of the line...
Henry the Horse.
And, of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz. Now, if you can hear a drug reference in that, as opposed to...
Well, a horse is heroin, isn't it?
Well, in that context, no, it's clearly a horse.
Every horse that's mentioned in song is a reference to heroin. It's clear, and especially if you've it's following on. Well, there's two songs
Been
on
from the desert
fixing
on
a hole,
horse fixing
a hole.
Yeah, it's not that. I don't buy it. I mean, and also, why would they be singing so much about heroin? They weren't doing heroin in 1967. They were doing LSD and a lot of pot. But so maybe the Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds one. I can buy that as a drug reference. But I'm not sure about Fixing a Hole. I think that's people read. That's a bit like we talked about on that when we did the White Album with Charles Manson, reading stuff into it that's just clearly not there.
But I mean,
Henry the Horse is clearly a horse because the song's about a fair. The song is about a fairground, so there would be a horse who might potentially be dancing a waltz.
Yeah, but to be fair, that horse could be on heroin.
Well, I think seeing as they talk about Mr. K quite a lot, he's probably on ketamine. He's probably on ketamine because
of course he's on ketamine.
That is a horse drug.
Yes,
but, I mean if he was on ketamine, that's all fine because that you know it's designed for horses, isn't it?
Well, to be fair, the only way that I can listen to when I'm 64 is when I am smacked up out of my my head.
Ah, okay, so you're going in early with the songs you don't like, then.
Yeah. Well, it's only really that one.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I was surprised at how much I liked this album, having not listened to it in a long time. I'd forgotten how much I liked lots of it. And there's only really two songs really that I don't really like, and it's not When I'm 64. I quite like When I'm 64. I don't really like With a Little Help from My Friends. I find that rather repetitive and boring. And
and it's better by John Cocker, isn't it?
No, I hate that version even more. Joe Cocker, you mean? But no, I hate
hang on. What's his real name?
Jarvis Cocker? I don't know.
No, yeah. John Cocker. That's I was giving you a little bit of information there, which you've knocked back at me.
All right. Okay. Famous
Sheffield gas fitter, John Cocker.
Well, he should have stayed at gas fitting, in my opinion. The problem with his cover version of that song, which is quite often held up as being one of the great Beatles covers, is he tries to make a very serious, you know, soulful song out of a song that's just a bit of frivolous silliness.
Well, it was written for Ringo, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, it's got I quite like some of the jokes in there, you know, about I think they missed a bit. You know, at the beginning of the song, we said, what would you think if I sang out of tune? The next line, he should have sung that really badly out of tune.
Well, he normally does, right?
No, he's all right. He's, you know, he gets a lot of stick, Ringo. Unfair.
Well, I read somewhere because McCartney wrote it, didn't he? But it was written deliberately within a very small range.
Ah, so okay.
So that Ringo could sing it, and that's probably why when John Cocker has a go at it, he has to go, you know, a bit burlesque, doesn't he, to give it all the vocal things that he can do.
Yes, yeah.
But it doesn't quite work, does it?
To be fair. I don't like it. Ringo refused to sing a line in that. Originally, it was "What would you do? What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you throw raw tomatoes at me?" And Ringo refused to do that. Because apparently
he anticipated.
Well, because he thought that people might actually do that, you know, bearing in mind on previous tours where somebody had mentioned in passing in an interview that they like jelly babies, so they were getting bombarded on stage by jelly babies, and he thought, I don't really fancy getting tomatoes thrown at me. Yeah. They'd retired from playing live by this point anyway.
That's true. There are only really two other songs which I don't particularly care for, and for very different reasons, actually. So Getting Better.
Uh-huh.
Which is all right. I mean, I quite like the idea. It's fairly sarky, isn't it, in terms of a love song on that. But it does mention about the protagonist in the song beating his girlfriend.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, I don't have to say allegedly now, do I? Which is something that Lennon did.
Oh yeah. Well, I've got a quote here from it, and it says this is him being interviewed in 1980. It is a diary form of writing. All that, I used to be cruel to my woman. I beat her and kept her apart from the things that she loved. That was me. I used to be cruel to my women. And physically, any woman. I was a hitter. I couldn't express myself and I hit. I fought men and I hit women. That's why I'm always on about peace, you see. It's the most violent people who go for love and peace. I'm not sure is true. They're the most violent people who go for love and peace. But and that was for an interview, you know, where he's trying to make amends for his poor treatment of women in the pages of Playboy in 1980.
Well, I'm not sure that does very well. I mean, I've got a personal interest in this because my mother-in-law, who is a Scouser, went to Liverpool Art College, same time as John Lennon was there. And she tells a tale of basically being warned off Lennon. Mm-hmm. By the people who, the dinner ladies and the cleaners and, you know, these women who sort of knew everything about everything, because he was whacking Cynthia around.
Oh.
So not a very nice person. Well, certainly at that time. I suppose people can change, can't they? But anyway, that song I don't like because of that. She's Leaving Home, which I wonder where you stand on this. I've really grown to dislike that. And the reason is that it's been used a lot in teaching English. So I've used it so many times as a teaching tool.
Right.
Because it's a story and it lends itself to writing, you know, dialogues and everything else, and it's a simple song in lots of ways. The language is very simple, so I've used it a lot, and so I can't stand it anymore. I just can't stand it. Well, I didn't realise until doing a little bit of research. Yeah, I did some research for this. Is that no Beatle plays any instrument on it? Did you know that?
Well, they're doing lots of vocals, but yeah, no instruments. Yeah. Yeah, because it's all, it's like Eleanor Rigby, isn't it? It's all sort of orchestral musicians that they hired in.
So if you like it, you like that one.
On the bonus tracks, on the deluxe edition, there's a sort of just the recording with no vocals on it. And you can hear, you know, the arrangement. Yeah, I really love She's Living Home. It's one of my favourites. It's kind of one of the best. Again, going back to Eleanor Rigby, that we talked about when we talked about Revolver, we talked about Eleanor Rigby and how they, you know, they're basically supporting people who are having difficult times in their lives and talking about that. And it's social commentary. I think if Ray Davies had written She's Leaving Home, people would be saying, well, this is, you know, another piece of mastery in social commentary, and this is one of the best songs he's ever written.
I think you're probably right, and it could very easily be a Kinks song, couldn't it?
Yes, yeah, but probably not with that arrangement. See, that's the thing about the Kinks and the Beatles in this era. Listening to them both sort of side by side, is the Beatles had the budget, clearly, because the Beatles, when they want to do a song that sounds a bit sort of Noel Coward-y or a bit old retro, like When I'm 64, they get like some players in to play that kind of thing. When they want to do, you know, a song with an orchestra, they get an orchestra in, like She's Leaving Home. Whereas, you know, Two Sisters or what's the song? The Season, End of the Season. You know, very much like that on the Kinks album, but they're being played by basically the same four guys or the same five guys that were there to begin with.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think that necessarily makes it better or worse, but it's just interesting to hear them song.
I'm not saying it's a bad song at all. I mean, I think it's got a lot going for it, and I would have said probably 30 years ago before I started teaching that it was one of my favourites of it, but it really isn't anymore. I'll tell you what is my favourite, though. Shall I go in with this?
Yep.
A Day in the Life would be my favourite song, by a mile.
Yes. Yeah, I wouldn't... It's definitely one of my favourites. It's probably in one of my top five Beatles, possibly even my favourite Beatles song of all of them. When I had the tape of the Blue double album, I used to play that one on repeat. And when I did my music degree, I had to write an essay about a Beatles song, and I wrote about that one.
What did you say about the final chord?
Pardon?
What did you say about the final chord?
Hang on a minute. I've got my essay right here, so I will tell you what I said. The final chord, I'll just read you a bit of it.
Please do.
I'll read you the whole paragraph if you like. Now the song was almost complete, but the Beatles returned to it on the 22nd of February to record a crashing piano chord after the final orchestral build-up. This was played simultaneously by John, Paul, Ringo and Mel Evans, sharing three pianos, and George Martin playing a harmonium. The chord was E major. The key, which, in the 18th century and after, was traditionally associated, though the Beatles cannot have known this, with heaven, according to a guy called Wilfred Mellers.
Look at your pretentious stuff there.
The resultant wall of sound was the perfect ending, not only to The Day in the Life, but to Sgt. Pepper as a whole, according to Mark Lewisohn. The fading chord lasts for 53 seconds on the vinyl recording, nearly half the length of Please Please Me, from just 5 years before. This illustrates how experimental the band had become since 1963.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And actually, it's funny you should mention Please Please Me, because I also found out that actually their recording of it was so complicated or complex that it actually took three times as long to record that chord than it took to record the whole of Please Please Me.
Please Please Me was recorded in 2 days, I believe. And this took 129 days, this album.
The album, yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm talking about the core.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great song. The full version is great as well, by the way.
It's all right. It's all right. It's not as good as the Beatles version. My favourite bit is the bit where finishes Paul's bit, and he goes on the bus, and he goes upstairs for a smoke. Had a smoke. Somebody spoke, and I went into a dream. And then what happens then? As they sort of go back into the sort of John bit of the song, it's amazing. But the whole thing's amazing. Yeah. The other one, that's definitely one of my favourites on the album. She's Living Home is definitely another one. Probably my other big favourite, like I said before, there isn't really any songs I dislike. I'm not crazy about Good Morning, Good Morning. I like the guitar set. The guitar solo is good, but
and the animal noises. Interestingly, that it was wasn't it written? The intention is it was written for an advert for cornflakes, I think.
Yeah.
Which gives me a chance to mention Guided by Voices. Thanks to Robert Pollard for making us listen to these records.
Okay.
Because he also was asked to write a jingle for Krispy Kreme donuts, and the song you might know, "Donut for a Snowman." Yeah, came out for that. He didn't get put out as a jingle or a song. I think he was asked rather than he offered it, but I might be wrong there. The other thing, actually, while we're on that subject about linking this album to Guided by Voices, is, you know, the idea of this made up band, the story of the made up band. And if you think about, you know, one of the things that Guided by Voices and that whole genre, I think you can call it a genre, has in common with that is the number of made up bands that appear. Not, you know, we've talked about on our podcast about Suitcase and the 100 albums by 100 different bands. And throughout his songwriting, he introduces made-up bands. And I think that this is almost certainly a starting point for that, some sort of influence.
Yeah. The other bit I was going to say was my other favourites, probably Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite... it's a brilliant tune. The arrangement, I love the all the fairground sounds on it. And Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I was never that much of a fan of that song until about 10 years ago. A band I was playing in were booked to play at somebody's wedding in at the Lowry Hotel in Manchester, and the bride was called Lucy, and she knew we were played mainly 60s stuff. So she said, "Can you play Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds?" And I'm not sure we're the band to carry that off. Because we're fine doing the earlier Beatles, you know, the rock and roll stuff. But we didn't do a lot of late 60s Beatles stuff. But it was surprisingly easy to play. I thought it was going to be really hard and complicated, but it wasn't. But just listening to that song over and over and over again as I was learning it just made me appreciate it far more. I'd always liked the lyrics, but I'd always thought the hadn't really appreciated the tune and especially the verse. It's really really amazing.
No, it's definitely one of my favorite. In fact, it's Mrs. O'Elve's favorite as well. I think it's one of their best songs, I think. Brilliant vocal. The vocals throughout are really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to prefer John's vocals, but nevertheless, throughout the whole album, Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, yes, that would be my top four. Do you know where the circus was?
No, where was the circus?
Rochdale.
Yeah. There you go.
So well done them.
Well done, Rochdale.
Yeah. All right. Well.
Have you said all your favourite songs from the album?
Yeah, well, A Day in the Life, Lucy in the Sky, Diamonds, Fixing a Hole, I really like as well, actually.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, but okay. Shall we move on to something else?
Let's literally do that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, like I said before, I only knew David Watts, Death of a Clown, and Love Me Till the Sun Shines and Waterloo Sunset, and pretty much all the other songs were new, apart from having heard them on that compilation. Which I heard before, which Chuck Prophet did Situation Vacant, which I loved. Mick Harvey did Funny Face, which I loved. Boogerins, you remember that band? We saw them live a few years ago, didn't we? They did No Return, which was pretty good. And
I don't like that song.
It's not that's one of my favourites. Boogerins did a good version of it, but it's not one of my favourites on the.
It's got a bossa nova beat, hasn't it? So you'd imagine a Brazilian band would do it justice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's quite nice melodically, but I think when I go back to listen to this album again, after I'm not listening to it in full for the podcast, there's a couple of songs I'll skip, and that's definitely one of them. No Return, yeah. It's definitely one of them.
It starts strong, though, the album, doesn't it? Don't you think? Big hit at the top.
Apart from No Return, yeah, the whole of the first side, I imagine the first side ended with Situation Vacant, I don't know.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the whole of the first side is fantastic, in my opinion. I love it. The song that I'd not really heard much before, it was Two Sisters. Because somewhere along the line, I've heard Harry Rag. I'm not sure how, but I have heard that before. But I've listened to it a lot in the last few weeks, and I really, really, really love it. It sounds like a show tune. Sounds like it could be out of... Fiddler on the Roof or something.
Yes, yeah. And do you know where Harry Rag comes from, the name?
Well, it's a cigarette.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's slang, isn't it, for that? Yeah. But it's actually a joint. Got good hand claps in that as well, I think.
It has, Harry Rag. And the lyrics are very good in the way they're kind of talking about all these people, some of whom are pretty much on the breadline, but they're still scraped together enough to get a Harry Rag. Yeah, love it. But the other song that really leapt out at me and has become probably one of my favourites, if not my favourite on the whole album, is Two Sisters, which is a song up until a few weeks ago I'd never even heard. I love it.
Would you agree that it's the most Beatles sounding song then?
Well, because of the harpsichord, probably.
Yeah.
Although I think Afternoon Tea is quite Beatlesy. I could imagine Paul McCartney singing Afternoon Tea.
That sounds very much. Afternoon Tea, I think, sounds very much like a song that could have appeared, and maybe was written at the same time as the songs on Village Green Preservation Society.
Yes, yeah,
it's definitely got that feel about it.
Yeah,
but Two Sisters is great. I think the story about Two Sisters is that it's about Ray and Dave.
Well, apparently during this time, they weren't getting on. I mean, they don't get on very well, do they, Ray and Dave? They're the original fighting. Well, they're not the originals, but the Everly Brothers were there before them. But they don't get on, do they? And at this point, Ray had a wife and a kid, or possibly more than one kid, and was living. He was more like the one who is jealous of her sister at the start of the song, who is going out with her fancy friends and her and has a social.
That was him. That was Dave getting laid and doing drugs probably.
Yeah, and then halfway through the song. Ray or what's the name of the song? Elf, she's got a weird name, isn't she? Severilla or something.
Yeah.
And she kind of looks at this. She thinks, well, I'll get the nursery nurse to look after the kids and ship them off for a bit. And then she just kind of has a change of heart and then realises that she's not jealous of her sister and is dancing around the house in her curlers. It's great.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing.
You can make a video, can't you?
You can make a whole film out of that story.
Yeah. Well, I think that actually that's the strength of Ray Davies' songwriting, is that a lot of his songs, a lot of the really good ones anyway, do have a storyline that you can expand on. I think Waterloo Sunset, same.
Yes, you know, very much so, yeah.
It's a story, but it's a story that you can relate to, but then make more of as you kind of want to. Talk about Waterloo Sunset, which is obviously, you know, it's a masterpiece, isn't it, Waterloo Sunset?
I
don't think you could improve it. I didn't realise until recently that it was originally called Liverpool Sunset. Did you know that?
No.
And as a result of their love for Liverpool because of the Beatles.
Right, yeah. It doesn't seem to make... Well, it seems to be, you know, that seems quite weird. I'm not sure it would be half the song it would. It certainly wouldn't have the associations for me, personally.
I'm not sure whether the lyrics changed to relate to the clock in Waterloo and all that.
Yeah.
Well, is there a clock at...
Yeah, there's a clock.
Yeah. Anyway, it must be. It would be a really rubbish railway station with a clock in it, wouldn't it?
But it would,
So Terry and Julie, of course, Terence Stamp and Julie Christie.
Well, supposedly, but I think Ray's denied that.
Has he?
Ray's claimed that's not true, but...
It's a bit of a coincidence.
It's also based partly on one of his sisters who moved to Australia, apparently.
So he stays.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's like you say, it's just one of those perfect records, isn't it? Everything, the arrangement, the song is perfect. It's like Wichita Lyman or Tracks of My Tears or something like that. But also, I always... it was, like I said before, it was the first song on that tape that I had, and I used to rewind it back to the start and play it over and over and over again. Waterloo is the station when I used to visit London from where I used to live. That's where I came into London, and I would very often just get out and walk about. I used to like walking over the bridge to embankment to the other side. And even now when I go to London, I always try to make a point of walking over the one of the bridges at some point, and it never fails to, you know, take my breath away. Number 42.
So just before we move on from there, the guitar sound on that, I think, is particularly good. It's that combination of the electric and the acoustic, I think, is something, again, just to bring it back to Robert Pollard, that you hear in a lot of Guided by Voices songs, that sort of combination of those two sounds. But nothing I've heard has quite captured it like that. I don't know what they did in the recording studio, because it doesn't sound like anything else.
No. It's just a really nice guitar line that Dave is playing. Yeah. And also the backing vocals on that are just amazing. It's just so well arranged, the whole thing. It was number 42, I found out. Rolling Stone did a poll of the 500 greatest songs of all time.
Yeah.
And this was number 42, one place above Tutti Frutti by Little Richard.
Yeah.
And one place behind The Weight by The Band. And on that subject, The Beatles' Day in the Life was slightly higher. That was number 28. But there were five Beatles songs that were higher than Day in the Life in that poll. And only one other song from Sgt. Pepper that made that list. Would you like to guess what the other song from Sgt. Pepper that made that 500 songs?
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
No, it was With a Little Help from My Friend.
Oh, jeez.
Number 311. Yeah.
Don't trust the lists. Don't trust the lists, kids. Just don't trust the lists.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we talk about side two? Can we talk about the A side? I mean, brilliant.
Yeah.
Did you want to say anything about Tin Soldier Man or Situation Vacant? I mean, they're both.
Tin Soldier Man's all right. Situation Vacant is brilliant. I absolutely love it. Chuck Prophet, as was mentioned before, has done that version, and he stays very closely to the original, and his version is fantastic. But even the Kinks version is also great. Love the story. I like the. We'll come back to that when we talk about.
Must play that on the guitar, right?
It's an organ, but we'll come back to that riff when we talk about "Blonde on Blonde" by Bob Dylan, because that's where they got it from.
Of course. Yeah. And a tin soldier. I always think of the tin soldier and Nixon coming in from Ohio, which I presume is what they're talking about there, rather than toy soldiers. But I don't know.
Don't know. Go back to one more thing on side one, which is "Death of a Clown," which was Dave Davis is singing, and that was released and was a hit for Dave Davis as a solo artist, and it was also just a brilliant song. And I read a thing where Ray Davis was saying that with hindsight it might have been a good time to split the band up after this album, because Dave had his solo career going and all that kind of stuff. As you say, it's good for us that he didn't, because they went on to make a lot more fantastic records. But have you ever read X-Ray, Ray Davis's book?
Yes.
Because in that you get the vibe from him that very, very frequently that he doesn't really want to be a singer or a songwriter. He doesn't really like it. He's not really comfortable with it. But
there are three Dave Davis songs on this album, aren't there? There's Death of the Clown, Footy Face, and what was it?
Love
another
to
one.
The Sunshines.
That's right. Yeah.
And Love Me to the Sunshine. I mean, is I like the guitar riff, but I just kind of feel the Kinks have done that kind of song on their earlier albums many times.
It's like a Who B-side, I thought.
Yeah, it's like Till the End of the Day or Stop Your Sobbing or one of those, but it's just kind of just maybe not as good. But the guitar riff is really good, and the guitar riff that opens Funny Face is also really good, but the rest of the song didn't really make a mark on me as much as a lot of the rest of the album did.
I think that all the interesting instrumentation went into Death of a Clown, because it starts with piano strings, doesn't it? Whereas the later songs, it's just guitar and straight up rock and roll band. Okay, well, let's talk about the side two then. which starts with Love Me Till the Sun Shines, and then we've got Lazy Old Sun, which I don't care for at all.
Ah, really? I thought you might like that one. I really like that one. I didn't like it at first. I thought this is rubbish and forgettable, but it's really, really, really grown on me. And I like the psychedelic feel of it. I like the chromatic.
Is it psychedelic? It's just dirge, isn't it?
Well, no, the production is quite psychedelic, isn't it? It's quite weird. I really like the melody and the do 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 the chromatically rising melody line. Yeah, that's one of my favourites. It's not in my top three, I don't think, but it's one of my favourites on this album. And again, a song I'd never heard until a couple of weeks.
Well, its only redeeming feature for me is that the "Kiss Me Is One Ray of Light," that line is good.
Well, but the bit that comes after it is fantastic. Go back and listen to it again.
Yeah. All right. Well, I've heard it more times than you, but anyway, there you go.
Afternoon Tea is pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty good. I quite like that one.
I mean, as I said, it sounds like it's from a different album, but it's fine, yeah.
Yeah. And Funny Fate
is okay.
Yeah.
But it's the weakest of the three Dave Davies songs, I think. And then End of the Season, which hugely disappointingly is not about the end of the cricket season. I suppose you'd describe it as being woozily nostalgic.
Well, it's one of those...
It's annoying, isn't it?
Well, no, I quite like it. It's not my favourite, but I quite like it. I think of it as like a sequel to Sunny Afternoon, because it's the same upper-class twit. It's the same upper-class twit character. There's always a lot of songs about class, isn't there, in Dave Davis? And having to go a bit of a pop at posh people in a sort of humorous way. And that's what this is, I think. But I think it's not helped by the fact that it's basically when I'm 64. This is what I was saying before. You know, it's the same kind of era. It's a Noel Coward style song, isn't it? But it's not played particularly well by the band, and you can't hear the words a lot of the time. The words are the best bit of the song, actually. But I don't really care for his singing in that weird voice, kind of Jeeves and Worcester kind of voice. But but I quite like it. I quite like it. Yeah, and then Waterloo Sunset, which I think we've said what we need to say about, really, haven't we?
Which is brilliant song. So all right then. So should we do some tops and bottoms here?
Yeah.
So are we in agreement that Waterloo Sunset is the best song on the album?
I would have been. I've got new favourites as well. Yeah. I like Waterloo Sunset and Two Sisters, and then I'd choose either Lazy Old Sun, Harry Rag, or Situation Vacant. Probably just for the fact that it just makes me smile, I'd probably choose Harry Rag.
Well, there you go. I mean, I had Harry Rag top four, but I would say David Watts is my next favourite song on the album, after Waterloo Sunset.
Yeah, I mean, David Watts, I love the song, I love the lyrics. We haven't really talked about that one, have we? But I think because I knew the Jam version first, it sounds a bit weedy compared to the Jam version. Yeah. I just think it could do with kicking a bit harder, and the Jam's version does kick a bit harder.
I accept that. I think it's a brilliant song. And Death of the Clown would be in my top four as well. Phantasmagorical, I would describe that as.
Indeed, yeah. And like I said, the only songs I don't really like was No Return, Tin Soldier Man. I mean, in as much as it's not that I hate them, but I just think if I was listening to the album again, I might skip those, and I might also possibly skip Funny Face.
I don't like Lazy Old Sun, No Return, or End of the Season.
Yeah.
But it's not enough to stop me listening to the album. I think the album's brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. So shall we give the scores to both albums?
Okay.
Scores out of 10.
Where have we put other ones so far? I saw one of our listeners was a little bit disappointed with the White Album getting. What did we give the White Album? 5 or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. It's not our fault. It's not our fault. And anyway, it's just as they say in the Big Lebowski. Well, that's just like your opinion, man. You know, it's just our opinion. It doesn't affect anyone else's view on it.
All right. So let's go back to Sergeant Pepper then.
Okay.
So this is the third, fourth Beatles album we've looked at.
Yeah.
And then we've got one more, and then we'll move on from the Beatles.
Yeah.
I'm going to say of the four that we've heard as an album, I think it's probably my favourite of the four.
Okay.
So I'm going to put it above Revolver. So I'm going to give it a 7.5.
All right. Okay. Well, I gave Revolver an 8.5, and I don't think it's quite as good as Revolver, but so I'm going to give it 8.
Fair enough.
And for the something else, like I say, there's some new favourite songs on there, but there's also a few more songs that I would skip than there are on Sergeant Pepper. So I'm going to give it 7.5, which is a very strong score. Yeah.
I'm going to give it slightly less than Sergeant Pepper. I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay. Okay, and I've made a Spotify playlist of that 100 Minutes of the Kinks compilation. Yeah. So we'll put that on the blog post.
Excellent.
If I can get my essay into a form, you know, that's not just on a piece of paper.
I can't imagine, Teresa, that there's anybody who does not want to read that in full.
I don't imagine there is, no. So next up, we're listening to the Beatles again. Last Beatles album, and it's Past Masters 1 and Past Masters 2, which is the compilations of all their non-album tracks.
German versions and all that sort of stuff.
Is there German versions?
Yeah, mine are good. Yes, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, good. Well, thanks for that.
Right, and by the way, listener, we are now on Spotify. So if you get the chance, follow us on there. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time for Beatles Past Masters.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcast, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kika Revels and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.